Good afternoon. It's Friday the 20th of May 2021, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Mike Robinson. Joining me in the studio today, Patrick Henningsen from 21st Century Wire. Welcome to the programme, Patrick.
Great to be with you, Mike.
Well, Patrick, is there going to be a summer or is there not going to be a summer? And I'm not talking about the weather.
That's the big question. So let's look at what the mainstream media are saying, or let's just call this the daily PSYOP here. Let's just take a review of the PSYOP this morning if you looked at the newsstands. If you're lucky enough to live in the United Kingdom. Let's look at this. Here's the Times. That's the in-house newsletter for the deep state and the intelligence community. What are they saying? Well, right down here in big, bold letters, Mike, Indian surge leaves end to restrictions in doubt. There's a picture of Matt Hancock there. Much consternation there by the health secretary there at Downing Street. So is there going to be, or is there not going to be? It's all up to this Indian surge that they're supposedly talking about. This they're calling it a strain now. It was a variant 2 days ago, Mike. Now it's a
strain.
It's a fast spreading strain. That's actually fake news, but this is the mainstream media. So moving on, the Daily PSYOP. What's next? Let's take a look at this. Well, variant fears threatened end to lockdown on June 21st. So you can see the papers here are all kind of in synchronization, Mike, with the talking points. So any idea that any of these are independent publications that have their own editorial lines, you can forget about that because that's no longer the case. Let's look at this. What's next? Here we go. Daily Express. Boris, we may need to wait for our freedoms. And he's still wearing a mask because, as you know, the pandemic is still raging, Mike. It's
raging.
The bodies are piling up in the streets. So that's why Boris has got his mask on. We may need to wait for a freedom. So you don't have freedoms until what? Until the government says so. So the farce continues. Again, it's because of this alleged Indian variant that they're all talking about here. Daily Mail, don't steal our summer.
Please don't. We have to beg for it.
Right. Yeah. Playing the good guy there. Sort of the paper of the people there, kind of in right in between. There. Let's just see if there's anything else on the newsstand. Well, there's this story, Mike. Is this where we're headed? Australia, back in lockdown once again. I think this is their fourth lockdown here. What's this based on? What triggered this down under? Well, Mike, it was 26 cases.
26 cases, Patrick, is
26 cases.
Devastating, yes. If your policy is zero COVID.
Zero COVID. So going back to the story here. So this is what we're saying here. Zero COVID cult, and it is a cult, equals zero brains. Why would you lock your country down for 26 PCR positive tests? They must be completely bonkers down in Australia. But Dan Andrews has recovered from his, quote, fall. He fell down the stairs.
Yes.
So he's recovered, and he's back again, and lo and behold, zero COVID. So that's the Tony Blair in training. Down there in Australia, the head of the Victoria People Republic.
Now, the problem for Boris Johnson, for the Tory government and for the Labour opposition, in inverted commas, is that they have maintained that this is the last lockdown. But of course, if they take us out of lockdown and they've said it's the last lockdown, then they can't bring us back into lockdown again. But if they never take us out of lockdown, then they can maintain their story that it's the last lockdown. So here is Kwasi Kwarteng, who's the business secretary, of course. He's the best person to have on BBC Radio 4 Today programme this morning, talking about whether they're going to move the date for the removal of lockdown, which, of course, at the minute is 21st of June. He doesn't think they'll move the date. And so I'm saying...
Possibly maybe, right?
Well, I'm saying that on the basis that government ministers have just simply lied about these things, and we're coming on to... vaccine passports a little bit later, and we're going to demonstrate that they just lie about these things. I'm presuming this is a lie.
This is a bit of a quasi statement by Kwasi here, isn't it?
It is, yes. But you saw Boris in a mask. Boris was speaking to the BBC yesterday. I'm going to say, apologise in advance for showing this, but let's have a look at have a listen to what Boris had to say.
Have we got enough of the protection that we want from the vaccines? To what extent is our vaccine shield now going to be enough to allow us to go ahead on June the 21st with the unlocking? Now, as I've said many times, I don't see anything currently in the data to suggest that we have to deviate from the roadmap. But we may need to wait, and we may need to see, and don't forget the important point about the intervals between the steps of the roadmap. We put that 5 weeks between those steps to give us time to see what effect the unlockings are having, and that's what we really need to establish. And the crucial thing is for people to come forward, get their second doses, get your second dose when you're asked to do so.
So the crucial thing, Patrick, is that when you're asked to do so, you must get your second dose. You must get it as soon as you're asked to get it, because that's the only possible way that we could be coming out of lockdown. But the question is it sensible to get your second dose?
Why is he wearing a mask, by the way? He hasn't been wearing a mask in front of the camera for months.
I think he was in a hospital, and so he had to be seen virtue signaling there. But
and they had the banner behind him with all the government propaganda on it, I noticed.
Yes, of course.
There was no staging involved at all.
None at all, no, of course not. But look, he asked that everybody get their second dose, and should we be getting our second dose?
Well, not everybody is reacting so well, Mike, to all of these vaccines and gene-based mRNA genetic injections, Mike. This is a story that was in the news. You might have seen this, other people as well. This is a British model, allegedly in good health, Mike, 39 years old, dies, falls into a coma and dies after receiving the AstraZeneca, is also a gene-based vaccine, by the way, just not the same technique or design as the mRNA Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. Nonetheless, a gene-based vaccine here, a brain hemorrhaging, Mike, all sorts of complications with regards to blood clotting and so forth. This isn't the only case.
Indeed, it is not. And very sadly, in fact, a BBC employee, Liz Shaw, has also passed away following vaccination. And the BBC News have had to publish this headline this morning, vaccine role in BBC presenter's death to be probed. So let's just have a look at the detail here. First of all, they quote a statement from the family. So let's just have a look at that. It says Lisa developed severe headaches a week after receiving her AstraZeneca vaccine and fell seriously ill a few days later. They said she was treated by the Royal Victoria Infirmary intensive care team for blood clots and bleeding in her head. Tragically, she passed away surrounded by her family on Friday afternoon. That's last week, obviously. We're devastated, and there's a Lisa-shaped hole in our lives that can never be filled. We will love and miss her always. And they've said it's been a huge comfort to see how loved she was by everyone whose lives she touched, and we ask for privacy at this time to allow us to grieve as a family. So that's the statement from the family. There's been quite a bit of pressure to actually look into this case and see what happened. So this is the MHRA's position. We are saddened to hear about the death of Lisa Shaw, and our thoughts are with her family. As with any serious suspected adverse reaction, reports with a fatal outcome are fully evaluated by the MHRA, including an assessment of post-mortem details if available. Well, we know for a fact, because we've been told by several people who have had relatives that have passed away, that this is not happening. So I'm going to say to June Rain, although she didn't actually make these statements, this was attributed to an MHRA spokesperson. Nonetheless, she is the chief executive. She holds responsibility for every statement that the MHRA makes. And so she needs to be challenged on this because there are a number of cases that we're aware of where this didn't happen. She went on to say, or the MHRA went on to say, our detailed and rigorous review into reports of blood clots occurring is ongoing. Well, the question then, Patrick, is what is the actual mechanism by which this is happening? And there is a new paper out. It is in preprint. It's not peer reviewed as yet, but nonetheless, I think it's worthwhile considering what they say. This paper is entitled Vaccine-Induced COVID-19 Mimicry Syndrome, Splice Reactions Within the SARS-CoV-2 Spike Open Reading Frame Result in Spike Protein Variants That May Cause Blood Clots in Patients Immunized with Vector-Based Vaccines. Okay, so let's summarize what this paper says here. And it says basically this, mRNA is the blueprint to a protein. You can get the mRNA into your body directly through the Pfizer Moderna vaccines, for example, or using a carrier virus. This is what you were talking about a second ago, that has the mRNA blueprint as DNA. So, for example, the genetically modified chimpanzee cold virus that's in the AstraZeneca cold vaccine. And in this case, the body has to first turn the DNA into mRNA. This paper then demonstrates that this latter approach gives rise to errors in producing the proteins, errors that can cause severe side effects, specifically creation of soluble spike protein fragments that bind to, for example, blood vessel linings, which in turn cause inflammatory and coagulant activity, which leads to the lethal side effects that are sometimes seen. So this paper being very clear about what they believe is the mechanism that's causing this. And others, Dr. Bhakti, I believe, is exactly what they've been saying as well.
That's right. Dr. Suchart Bhakti from the University of Mainz, he's retired, one of the top microbiologists, really in Europe, possibly in the world, one of the most cited, at least in terms of academic literature and scientific literature on this. They warned to the European Medicines Agency about this very thing, Mike, before the reports started pouring in February. And lo and behold, and to his horror and to his colleagues' horror, Doctors for COVID Ethics, go visit their website and see the letter which they sent to the European Medicines Agency asking to halt the vaccine rollout because of the risks of what you have just read there, Mike.
Yes.
Blood clotting, complications. So it seems that when you inject this experimental vaccine directly into the bloodstream, it's not a natural way to enter the body. All sorts of things can happen, including your immune system attacking your own cells, epithelial cells on the lining of blood vessels and in the brain, and all sorts of problems that you can have with this. So one hopes the MHRA statement there from the CEO, Ms. Rain, she says that all fatal outcomes are fully evaluated and they're rigorously looking into it. I would hope that they would, their full evaluation would be better than the quote, full evaluation they did when they waved through this unlicensed experimental pharmaceutical product under an emergency authorization. And I hope it's more rigorous than the due diligence that was given these vaccines and other injections that have just been matadored through the regulatory process under the state of emergency. And I might add, Mike, that if it wasn't for lockdown, there would be no state of emergency. If there was no state of emergency, there would be no emergency authorization of vaccines.
That's absolutely correct. And just if you didn't see Wednesday's program, go and have a look at it, because we looked at the pandemic preparation document that was published in 2011 from the Department of Health. Lockdown was absolutely not on the cards at that point. And we made the point that the World Health Organization considered Britain's approach to pandemic preparedness to be one of the best in the world. So lots changed in 2020, but just a reminder that if you want to have a look at a sensible rendering of the MHRA data on adverse reactions, go to yellowcard.ukcolumn.org, and the latest data is there as of this morning. Now, Project Veritas, Patrick has been doing some good work, and they have been looking at the situation with respect to censorship and criticism of the vaccination rollout, and particularly with respect to Facebook.
That's right. This report was just released a couple of days ago. This is pretty groundbreaking in a sense, Mike. Two whistleblowers from Facebook have leaked internal documents about Facebook's effort to secretly, in terms of behind the scenes, shadow banning, censoring anybody who's concerned about vaccines or is skeptical of vaccines. And this is being done on a global scale. This is what it is. Facebook whistleblowers exposed leaked internal documents detailing new effort to secretly censor vaccine concerns on a global scale. That's internationally. Let's take a closer look at what the contents of this report are. This is pretty shocking if you consider the implications of this. These are two insiders. I assume these are employees or contractors. They revealed an internal company document detailing a plan to curb vaccine hesitancy, they're calling it, on a global scale. The stated goal of this new system is to drastically reduce user exposure to vaccine hesitant comments and to decrease engagement with vaccine hesitant comments users that include, you know, creating likes, reports, replies, etc. So anything to do with any content, posts, replies, things like this. So this is their system that they set up here. And it goes on. So this is interesting. True events or facts that raise concern about COVID vaccines are fair game to be demoted and hidden, despite their authenticity or capacity to contribute to the public good. This could include the types of reports that we're doing at the UK Column, that 21st Century Wire is posting, that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is posting with Children's Health Defense, et cetera. Mm-hmm. These are deemed to be fair game by the censorship team at Facebook that want to suppress any concerns regarding the COVID vaccines. They're trying to control this content before it even makes it onto your page, before you even see it, said another Facebook insider here. And let's look at what else. It doesn't matter if the comments are true, factual, or represent reality. The comment is demoted, buried, and hidden from view of the public if it clashes with this system's programmed algorithms that are decided by this committee. Mm-hmm. And who knows who's advising them? Is Anthony Fauci's office advising them? Who is advising them? Bill Gates? Who is advising them? Pfizer? Who is advising Facebook on this? Or are they just making it up as they go along? If it doesn't match the narrative being get the vaccine is good for you, everyone should get it. And if you don't, you will be singled out. Mm-hmm. So this is from an insider here. This is a quote. So there's a great video, Mike. It's about 20 minutes long. I encourage people to go check this out at Project Veritas's website. So according to one of the insiders, the data, he's a data center a technician, leaked multiple internal documents about the algorithm. It's being run on 1.5% of Facebook's user base and Instagram nearly 3.8 billion users worldwide. So this is already being operational, Mike. This is being used already. Let's take a look, though, at some of the documents. There he is, Mark Zuckerberg. He is in control of what you think about vaccines. So look at this. You can see this is Facebook Inc.'s COVID-19 vaccine offense and defensive work, they're calling it here. This is an internal document. They're calling it a framework. What is this? This is fancy language for a Chinese-style censorship regime from one of the biggest monopolies on the planet in terms of social media and tech. This should send chills down people's spines. Look at this, vaccine hesitancy comment demotion. Here is their executive summary. So this is internal company policy. So it's to censor anybody who's got any legitimate concerns about vaccine injury, about vaccine deaths. And how many news reports have we shown today and on this program in the last how many months, Mike?
Right.
This is a real issue out in the public, but Facebook is trying to disappear it. And look at this. There's the rating system, Mike. This is how intricate their censorship system is. They will assign you one of these ratings here. Look at the left-hand column there. And this is whether you're clean or you're dirty in terms of your vaccine hesitancy classifier score threshold. I wish they would give this much attention to PCR cycle thresholds, Mike, but they're censoring those too because they fall foul of the vaccine hesitancy algorithm matrix here. And this is the kind of stuff that they really want to bury, Mike. This is reports from the VAERS system in the United States, vaccine adverse reactions and fatalities. Look at this. This has been marked as an exhibit by this team here. This is the sort of thing that they want to crush, basically. And so Mark Zuckerberg does not want the public or any of the how many billions of users worldwide. This is globally. This is not just in the United States. They are doing this to the global population. Who are they doing it on behalf of? And just check this out. I mean, this is the sort of stuff that we see every day. Look at this. Latest CDC data shows a report on adverse reactions for COVID vaccines. Over 200,000, including 943 among 12 to 17-year-olds. Just blow that up there. Look at this. It's specifically, take a look at this column here, Mike. This is just recently the data update here. We're seeing increase in deaths, permanent disabilities, emergency room visits. This is the sort of stuff that Facebook has been caught intentionally trying to bury. What else are they burying? These sort of stories here. Johnson & Johnson knew about the issues regarding the contamination of their vaccines that they were doing with AstraZeneca 7 months before the shutdown, Mike. 7 months. This is on Children's Health Defense. This is the sort of content that Facebook has deemed to be bad for their users. And how do we know this? Well, they kicked Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the founder of Children's Health Defense, off the platforms a few months ago. So he's being heavily censored. What for what? For what? Telling the truth, basically. Mm. So it's pretty outrageous. And look at this. I'm going to say this, Mike. Why people are now really at the end of their rope, okay? I'm going to show you a couple of legal actions that are in motion right now, and I think this is the beginning of what could be a tidal wave of legal actions in the United States, but also the U.S. is going to be more because it's more of a litigation culture.
Right.
But this could be global. So if Facebook is suppressing legitimate information in their own documents, they've said, even if it's factual, we're going to bury it. Is there not an argument that Facebook is culpable for any vaccine adverse reactions or deaths because they have a monopoly on social media globally, more or less, as much as anybody, and they're keeping their users from actually seeing important information that could save lives, that's in the public interest. So there could be a wave of lawsuits. I think Facebook might be, there's lawyers out there that are looking at this saying, is Facebook fair game for legal action in every single country that Facebook operates in internationally?
Yes.
And what would that mean to Facebook if there's a torrent of lawsuits against them and even their employees, even their executives? They could be held personally liable because this isn't just about corporate policy. There is actually individuals who are actioning this type of damaging policy, damaging to the public interest, certainly if you're looking at the adverse reactions and deaths. So let's look at a couple of those legal challenges here, Mike. This is America's frontline doctors have filed a motion for temporary restraining order against the use of COVID vaccines in children here. This is what Dr. Simone Gold has said. She's a founder of Frontline Doctors. We doctors are pro-vaccine, but this is not a vaccine, she says. This is an experimental biological agent whose harms are well documented, although suppressed and censored by Facebook, as we just said, and growing rapidly. And we will not support using America's children as guinea pigs, says Dr. Simone Gold. And she goes, we will not be silent while Americans are used as guinea pigs for a virus with a survivability of 99.8 globally, 99.97 under the age of 70. Under the age of 20, it's 99.997. Statistically, zero, says America's frontline doctors. I don't think you can argue with those facts, Mike. And this we put in red because this is important. We doctors won't stand for children being offered something they do not need and whom some unknown percentage will suffer from a possibly an adverse reaction. So, Mike, there's an argument there they could be at greater risk of an adverse reaction or a fatality than from ever getting ill or ever getting hospitalized from SARS-CoV-2.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's, I think, a pretty strong argument by the America's Frontline Doctors. And the next organization here, this is also something to look at, a legal brief. All U.S. employees are protected from mandated COVID injections. So vaccine and mRNA gene-based injections are unlicensed experimental pharma products. So this gets into the issue of employers, Mike.
And this is another really controversial issue as well. If an employer mandates the use of a vaccine, does that leave the employer open to legal action if there's an adverse reaction experienced? The problem for people is going to be establishing that the reaction was as a direct result of the vaccine. And because the likes of the MHRA and the government and the media are saying, no, there's nothing to see here, and they're actually not doing, as we mentioned earlier on, they're not doing the background analysis. They're not actually not looking into deaths. Then it might be difficult to pursue a case, but I think litigation is very much on the cards in the not too distant future.
Well, we spoke to some lawyers about this issue, Mike, and there is a kind of a fine line there. With regards to an employee being able to sue their employer, at least in America, from an adverse reaction or from a death, that's murky. That could have to be fleshed out in case law. This could be a big precedent case if it does come to that. Mm. But what they can sue their employer for is if their employer threatens to sack them for not taking the vaccine, the employer, the company, the corporation is open to U.S. law. That's a violation of the person's rights. And not only that, the companies don't have a leg to stand on. The government doesn't either, by the way, because it's an unlicensed emergency authorization pharmaceutical product.
Yes.
So again, in terms of protecting your employability, yes, there's a strong legal case in U.S. law. But with regards to suing them for an employer for a reaction or a death from a vaccine, that is not clear.
Yes.
So those are the different nuances on the legal argument.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we have a little bit of video here of Dr. Scott Jensen.
Dr. Scott Jensen put his candidacy for governor of Minnesota, former state senator of the state of Minnesota here. He's an MD, family doctor, very outspoken from the beginning on this crisis. We've got a statement that he's just released this week, and I think everyone needs to listen to this.
Hi, I'm Scott Jensen. I'm running to be the next governor of Minnesota. I'm going to say this. Parents should be angry, but kids should be furious. Over the last week, we've seen an incursion into the rights of our children, the rights of our families, and the rights of our parents regarding a discussion of mandatory vaccination of COVID-19 for kids. This is problematic on multiple levels. But what really troubles me is that we're being told that kids have to be vaccinated now because of the data. Well, yesterday, new research came out showing that, you know what? The hospitalizations that we've been told that occurred with kids because of COVID-19, that data has been corrupted too. I've been saying this for the last 13 months. It isn't just one decision by one agency. It's literally this effort to create a culture of just willy-nilly put COVID on the death certificate, put COVID-19 as a discharge summary from the hospital. You might get paid more by Medicare. And now we're seeing it happen again. Hospital Pediatrics came out and said that at least 40% of the pediatric admissions, quote, COVID-19 admissions, were not. These were hospitalizations for cancer treatments. These were hospitalizations for surgeries, for psychiatric episodes, suicide potential, drug overdoses. In some situations, one article commented that even a patient being admitted with acute appendicitis being regarded as a COVID-19 admission. The fact of the matter is, we have known for months that the danger to the pediatric population of COVID-19 is minuscule compared to other things that they're at risk for. We've seen suicide just blow up, and we've seen drug overdoses almost double, and we've seen so many other devastation from the collateral damages occurring from the policies put in place. Hunger, increased tuberculosis across the world. But this is just one more article about the corruption. We are seeing people put down, this is a COVID-19 pediatric admission, and it's not. Folks, I've been saying this for 13 months. There's been a corruption of the data, of what we can trust. I think we've all gotten to the point where sometimes we'll see an article or hear a news clip, and we'll just literally, whatever, because we just can't trust. Think about it.
Yeah, we can't trust the data, and that's increasingly clear.
Jacking up the numbers on children. This is something I think we're going to see. We're predicting this is what.
We've already had a go at that. If you remember back to middle of the year last year, there were attempts to suggest that children were experiencing some kind of negative effects as a result of COVID-19 infections.
And that results in what? School closures?
Yes.
Mask mandates for kids. So you can see how this is really a scam when you look at the quality of the data. There is no quality of the data. There is no accountability, not with the case numbers, not with death certificates, dying with, dying from. It's just all basically one big soup that's been allowed to accumulate since the beginning of this crisis. And it's that junk data, it's that very garbage in, garbage out problem with the data, with PCR testing, with lateral flow testing too, as if that's some sort of solution to anything. This is the predicate of the whole global pandemic narrative, and that's where you get all your policies, your lockdowns, your masks, your social distancing, your travel restrictions, etc. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I don't want to get into the variants yet.
Not yet, no.
That's even worse.
Well, look, let's come back to the UK then. And of course, yesterday, Dominic Cummings was giving evidence in Parliament. And really, if we were to summarize that, what was he doing? It's being presented as being some massive attack on Boris Johnson, on Matt Hancock. But actually, if you listen to what he said, he was very much underpinning the lockdown narrative. In fact, we didn't lock down fast enough. If we had locked down faster, we might have saved tens of thousands more lives. And I'm very, very sorry for the extra deaths. Well, in fact, that is completely untrue, because we can show that those lives weren't directly lost, or in fact, in many cases, were caused by the lockdown, not by any suggestion that the lockdown was behind the curve. But there was one very interesting little segment, because the question is, where did this lockdown policy come from? And then subsequently, the vaccination policy, and certainly the pressure to get the vaccines out within 6 months. Where did that come from, I wonder? Let's have a listen, and maybe we'll get a clue.
Like lots of other things, though, there's no doubt that we could actually have done this faster than we did. The conventional wisdom was, we're not going to be able to have any vaccines in 2020. Now, in March, I started getting calls from various people saying, these new mRNA vaccines could well smash the conventional wisdom, don't necessarily stick to it. People like Bill Gates and that kind of network were saying. So essentially what happened is, there's a network of people, Bill Gates type people, who are saying, completely rethink the whole paradigm of how you do this. Build in parallel, here is the science thing, here is the manufacturing thing, here's the distribution, here's the supply, here's logistics, here's the data. The normal thing is you kind of do those sequentially. What Bill Gates and people like that were saying to me and to others in number 10 was, you need to think of this much more like some of the classic programs of the past, the Manhattan Project in World War II, the Apollo program, build it all in parallel. Now, in normal government accounting terms, this is completely crazy, because if nothing works out, you've spent literally billions building all of these things up, and then the end result is nothing, you get zero for it, it's all waste. But what Bill Gates and people were saying, and what Patrick Vallance and Patrick's team were saying was, the actual expected return on this is so high that even if it does turn out to be all wasted billions, it's still a good gamble in the end. And all the conventional Whitehall accountancy systems for this can't basically cope with it. And you've just got to throw them all down the toilet. And that's essentially what we did. Patrick came to me and said, I want to do this. I think we must take it out of Department of Health.
Amazing.
Absolutely amazing. So Bill Gates clearly was driving government policy. It was a gamble. It was just a bit of a gamble. It was a gamble worth taking, but we may have flushed billions of pounds down the toilet, is how he described it.
Yeah. So accountability, flush all that down the toilet, says Dominic Cummings, because according to Patrick Vallance, who owns quite a few shares in the pharmaceutical industry, the payoff was just too great to say no.
That seems to be a fair summary of what was being said.
Even if we lose 20 billion, 30 billion, how much they spend on test and trace? How much?
30 billion.
30 billion. How many people did they actually, how many lives did test and trace save?
Can they prove? I think it was a nice round number.
Whatever it is, divided by the total spend.
Yes.
And then you get an idea of what the cost. So Dominic Cummings.
Well, if you divide zero by any number, you still get zero, Patrick.
Oh, you're talking about the
round number, yes.
So he's talking about the Manhattan Project, and it's you know, Bill Gates. Where was he elected to? Bill Gates. Which constituency does he represent? Is he a minister?
No.
He's not elected.
Can't think.
Okay. Is he a doctor?
No.
Does he have a PhD? No.
No.
Okay. So Bill Gates said it's like the Manhattan Project.
Does he even have a degree?
No.
No.
He's got honorary degrees, lots of them.
Right.
But you, when you have billions of dollars, you get lots of those. So Manhattan Project, that's the A-bomb, the atomic bomb. Isn't it interesting how they're comparing the vaccine rollout, an experimental pharmaceutical corporate product, to the atom bomb project, okay, that supposedly it didn't really end World War II. What it did was usher in a whole epoch of dominance and a new world order that had the U.S.-led post-World War II liberal internationalist world order.
Right.
That's what the Manhattan Project and the Cold War and the arms race. So that should tell you the way that these people view the vaccine project. Mm. To them, it's like an atomic bomb.
Yes.
And guess what? It's a slow burner, and it's going off as we speak. And
yes.
Guess what? It's going to keep going off for years. We're going to be talking about this, the numbers, the data, the adverse reactions. Who knows where it's going to end? How would they know? They only spent 9 months developing it. These things normally take 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years. There's a reason for that.
And as we said on Wednesday's program, and we demonstrated it again, the placebo group no longer exists. So there is the fact that the trials continue, they're continuing without a placebo group, so there cannot be any long-term evaluation of safety of these vaccines at
so
all.
They've thrown all that out the window,
yes.
The science, basically.
Yes.
So, and last thing I'll say, notice how Dominic Cummings didn't say anything about the risk of rushing through an experimental pharmaceutical product and then compelling the entire population to take it. There's not, so these people are absolute psychopaths, okay? They have no empathy. They have no sense of risk measurement or anything like that. It's like, no, we have to build these pillars like Dominic Cummings was saying, and that the payoff is just too great. And it's going to outweigh the risks no matter what. So, I mean, these people are completely out of control. So, and we called him controlled opposition last week. Mm. And so that analysis still stands strong, I think, based on what we saw during his testimony in
yes.
the Commons. I mean, he absolutely defended the party line, although there is this air that he's opposing Boris. He defended all the policies, in fact, more so. And vigorously so than anyone else.
Okay, well, of course, the question is what justification was there for lockdown and so on in the first place? And the main reason was to protect the NHS. We've got to stop the NHS from being overwhelmed by the sheer volume of numbers of people. Now, I appreciate this is only one example, but it's just the latest example because many other people are doing similar things. Here we have a Freedom of Information request for I believe this is Stepping Hill Hospital. This is Stockport NHS Foundation Trust main hospital, and it looks after a population of approximately 350,000 people. So let's just zoom in on this a little bit. And the question was, can you send me the total number of admissions for all hospitals in your region for the following years, 2018, 2019, and 2020? And the answer that came back was the total numbers of admissions for Stepping Hill Hospital. Remember, that looks after 350,000 people. In the following years are 2018, 88,351, 2019, 87,627, 2020, 65,306. So
looks like a pandemic, Mike.
That's more evidence of a pandemic. So Coroni has made a return because Coroni is really confused at this point.
Well, I would be too, looking at those 3 years there, Mike. That's a huge drop in 2020. What happened to the pandemic? Coroni's confused. Look,
Coroni is
no idea what's
confused.
Going on.
Indeed. So anyway, let's move on. Now you're talking about doctors in the United States taking legal action and so on. Let's have a look at this. This is from the Heart Group, which is a group of doctors, and there are some pretty eminent doctors in amongst this, and they've published an open letter. This is entitled COVID-19 Child Vaccination Safety and Ethical Concerns. This is an open letter from UK doctors to Dr. June Rain, who's the chief executive of the MHRA. So let's just have a look at a couple of the things that they are saying here. We call upon our governments and the regulators not to repeat mistakes from history and to reject the calls to vaccinate children against COVID-19. We must not be the generation of adults that through unnecessary haste and fear risks the health of children. But they were making the point that children don't need to be vaccinated for their own protection, that children don't need to be vaccinated to support herd immunity. They talk in their open letter about the risks and benefits in medical treatments, the fact that no medical intervention should be introduced to a one-size-fits-all basis, but instead should be fully assessed for suitability according to the characteristics of the age cohort and the individuals concerned, weighing up the risk versus benefit profile for each cohort and the individuals within a group. But of course, that isn't really being done on a serious basis. They talk about the short-term safety concerns. They make the point that as of the 13th of May, the MHRA has received a total of 224,544 adverse events, including 1,145 deaths. That's, of course, out of date now because another week has gone past and there are more deaths. And they talk about long-term safety concerns, and they're talking about the phase three trials, that the fact that they're not going to conclude until late 2022, early 2023. And they're saying the vaccines are therefore currently experimental with only limited short-term and no long-term adult safety data available. So, you know, they're very clear on their position here. And just we'll just put some of the names of the doctors up here. We've got some retired doctors, of course. We've got Lord Mooney there, who's former Parliamentary Undersecretary of State, former consultant to public health in public health medicine, various university professors, and other doctors, and the list is reasonably extensive. So do get that around.
That list there, Mike, that list, this is shaping up to be an exemption list for this Nuremberg 2 trials, isn't it?
It's quite possible,
those
yes.
Those who put their names on that list have exempted themselves from the next Nuremberg proceedings, probably.
Yes. Well, look, we're going to issue another apology because we're going to put Michael Gove on screen now and a little bit of video, because I just want to remind everybody what Michael Gove was saying with respect to vaccine passports earlier in the year. Just have a listen to this very briefly. Don't worry, it won't take long.
Will there be a sort of COVID passport for those who have had the vaccine?
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. I mean, that's not the plan.
Do I need to have a vaccine passport in order to go to the pub?
No.
Will I need to?
No.
What is it about him that oozes trustworthiness, Mike, and stoic leadership? What is it?
Not quite sure. Not quite sure. But anyway, you heard very clearly, no vaccine passports in the works. All the while, of course, they had, eight projects
on the go.
Yes.
Yeah. Vaccines Minister Nazim, while they were telling us there was no plans for vaccine passports, they were marshaling no less than 8 projects for months while they were denying it in the press.
And now they've issued a contract, so I want to thank the person who sent this to me. Let's get it on screen. So this is NHSX, COVID-19 Vaccination Certification Programme, and this contract is worth £21 million. Let's have a look at the description. The printing and mailing of secure COVID-19 vaccination paper documentation. So what does that mean? Well, the deliverables are the printing and postage of secure documentation to provide proof of COVID-19 vaccination status to the general public. So that is very clear. That is a vaccination passport, vaccination certificate, whatever you want to call it. So once again, the government simply lying through their teeth, because this project didn't just fall out of the air in 5 minutes. This has been being worked on for a significant amount of time. So who has been awarded this contract? Well, it's this organization, HH Global. It's their UK subsidiary. And you can see they work with all kinds of nice people to do all kinds of nice things there on screen.
Blackstone, yeah. Yes. So they have a great client list. This is the highly connected, high-flying public relations and marketing communications firm. So bravo for landing the £21 million contract for a program that's not supposed to be happening.
Yes.
Well done.
Okay, back to the United States now, and Gavin Newsom.
Gavin Newsom is the governor of California, perhaps not for long. There's a recall effort which looks to be going forward. Here he is, Mike, doing the elbow bump there. So ever the great virtue signaler, Gavin Newsom is here, and people are fleeing the state in droves for Texas and Nevada and other places. And here's why. Look at this. Let's do it. Let's do this, CA. Vax for the win. What is he talking about? Vax for the win. What could he be talking about? Well, it's this. Believe it or not, California, Gavin Newsom, they're giving away cash prizes. Look at this cheesy little flyer here that's sent out by the governor's office. Over 116 million in prizes, 10 cash prizes of 1.5 million. It's like Powerball.
Well, that's 15 million, it says.
Oh, so okay, yeah. No, 1.5 million each, okay.
So, oh, I see, right. Yeah.
And look at this, Mike. $50,000 Fridays, 30 winners. And look at down below, if you're not so lucky, but hey, there's something for everybody. $50 incentive cards, grocery or prepaid cards for 2 million new fully vaccinated people starting May 27th, while supplies last. This is just the epitome of desperation, Mike. And when we talked about the fact that we might be living in a Black Mirror episode, you only have to look at things like this to know that that's actually true. The farce is just gone beyond. Mm. If this was such a great product and everybody wanted it so badly, why do they have to bribe people with lottery tickets? This is really sad. But this shows you the mindset of people in politics right now. They think that they are somehow showing leadership and anything but, anything but.
I think equally, Patrick, though, it shows the reality of the situation. This, what we're fed in the mainstream press about the success and from politicians about the success of the vaccination programs, I don't think it's real. It's not real. If it was real, we wouldn't be saying things like that.
That's desperation.
It is.
And it's also designed, Mike, to cover up the mounting statistics regarding adverse reactions and deaths and complications. That we have just proven it on this program. Project Veritas has shown it in depth, that the social media companies that dominate, that have a monopoly on social media globally, are actively censoring any negative information or even opinion or news reporting or VAERS reporting or yellow card reporting on anything that's going to portray vaccines in a negative light. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is a conspiracy. Mm. Okay. And the sooner people get that through their heads and get into reality on this, the better. Because guess what? People's lives are at stake right now, and not from COVID.
Indeed. Right. Okay. If you like what the UK Column does and you would like to support us, then please head over to ukcolumn.org/community, and there are options to help us out there. Also, do share our material on the platforms, even though one of those platforms, and if at least one of those platforms, isn't going to want us, our material, to be shared. And then tomorrow, Patrick, another march, this time in London.
Indeed, indeed. This is the 29th Saturday in London. This looks like it's going to be big, Mike. They're calling for 1 million people, and we've been talking to some people on the ground around the country, and it looks like there's going to be a lot of people there. They might get that 1 million that they're looking for this march here. There's a bunch of organizations you can see, Stand Up X in the middle, but so many others that are coming on this. So no masks required, everybody's invited. Yes. So I guess they're, you can find them on Telegram and some other platforms there for information, but you can probably do some networking and find out what's going on there. That's gonna be in central London tomorrow. So really exciting there to see the participation on that.
Okay.
It's quite positive.
And you have produced a t-shirt, Patrick, which is on the UK Column website now, if anybody wants to get hold of that.
Well, yeah, if you're going to any protests in the future this summer, this looks like the t-shirt that you want to have. Chocolate brown, soft spun cotton. Mike, what's that on the front? I'm loving the old normal. I can't think of anything that Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates would not want you to wear this summer than that t-shirt. And what's on the back? We're all essential.
Yeah.
We're all essential. That's a controversial comment, I'm told, though. We were turned down by some people.
You were turned down for some people to manufacture the t-shirts because of that statement?
Because they said they were offended by "we are all essential." They said that was an offensive comment, and they couldn't in good conscience process the order. Maybe they didn't like the old normal. I don't know which, but what's so bad about saying that everybody is essential?
Yes.
Everybody is essential. So we're rolling back the propaganda.
Yeah.
So
now, obviously, Alex Thompson has been promoting the story of Mary and Mikey, and there has been a fundraiser related to that to get Mary and, well, particularly Mikey, the child's contents from storage in the UK to their new location in the Netherlands. And many of you have very generously contributed to that fundraiser. Unfortunately, I've got to tell you that the bank that has received the money is now refusing to pay it out to the person who owns the bank account that was paid to. There is an article on the UK Column website at the moment, which is explaining the situation in detail and also details of how you can write to the bank to express your opinion about the position that they're taking. Do have a look at that. It's on the front page of the website at the moment. Now, two pieces of legislation that we've been talking about in recent weeks. The first, of course, is the Online Safety Bill. Massively important that everybody understands what that is and understands the implication for censorship. We've got to stop that bill in its tracks. But the other one that's extremely important, of course, is the Police and Crime Bill. Because this is going to have a chilling effect on the right to protest, absolutely chilling effect on the right to protest. Now, the problem with the Police and Crime Bill is that that particular campaign has mostly been co-opted by the likes of Extinction Rebellion and Black Lives Matter. And so people that aren't aligned with their aims aren't really engaged with this issue and aren't campaigning against the bill. This really needs to change. But look, I want to highlight this book. Here, this is from Joe Boyd. Now, Joe Boyd was a great friend of Ian R. Crane. He met Ian R. Crane at the Barton Moss fracking protest. He is an environmental campaigner, but he's a really fantastic guy. He ran some of the court cases around the fracking issue, and he's published this book called The Road to Kill the Bill. I strongly recommend people get this. It is the story of Joe Boyd. He joined the anti-fracking front lines across Northern England from 2013, and to say that's where he met Ian. But he also took the fight to the court to the High Court in 2017 and the Court of Appeal to defeat the richest man in Britain at the time, who was Sir Jim Ratcliffe. So the Lee Day press release on this says the Court of Appeal has today granted the appeal brought against the anti-fracking protest injunctions sought by Aeneas, ruling that two of the remaining four interim injunctions upheld by the High Court are unlawful and that the two others need to be reconsidered by the High Court. So Joe understands what he's talking about. He does cover the history of the attempts to prevent protest in this country in his book. And so I suggest you get hold of it, understand the issues and get involved in this issue, because that bill will see the end of protest in this country.
Yeah, and not only that, Mike, get a hold of that book to hear that story, because it's a phenomenal story.
Yes.
It's the ultimate story of David and Goliath, and we were very honored to have known Ian throughout that challenge and to see them victorious at the end, as you mentioned, Mike, against the richest man in Britain.
Yes.
Is really a testament to the dogged determination of those people. But not only that, their canny knowledge and ability with regards to understanding the law.
Yes.
And that is so crucial.
Yes. Now, on Wednesday's program, one of the other things we talked about was emergency alerts, because emergency alerts is a new service from the UK government. It's expected to launch in the summer of 2021, and it's going to warn us all when there's danger to life nearby. It's going to produce an emergency alert on your phone, if you've got the right kind of phone. And it's going to make a siren kind of noise. It's going to let you know exactly what's going on. Well, look, I'm going to say thank you very much to the person who sent this through to me. I'm just going to add a little bit to this, because we received this yesterday. This is the Cabinet Office's emergency alerts presentation. It's private and confidential, not for sharing onwards, but it appears to have been shared onwards. I don't know who by. This is the basis of it, because this is not using SMS or any kind of internet-based protocols to get this information to you. This is using cell broadcasting. As long as you've got the right kind of phone, you'll get the right kind of alerts. It explains how it works. These are different to SMS messages. You'll receive an alert if you're in a geographical location in which the alert is sent, if you're on a 4G or 5G network, if your handset is manufactured post 2015, if you have the latest software update, and if your phone is switched on. So they've got a roadmap to the launch, including some pilot schemes. And of course, they have the propaganda machine in full operation for it. So the Mail, the Express, the Mirror, the Independent, Sky News, and so on, all advertising this new scheme. But of course, they've got to have guidance for road users, because you should not be worrying about these alerts if you get one while you're driving, because you must not hold a mobile phone while you're driving or riding a motorcycle.
Oh, they talk about flooding, Mike, fires, terrorism. They didn't mention one thing, which...
Don't worry. Health is on there. Health alerts as well.
Pandemics.
Pandemics, yes.
So if COVID has been spotted in your area, Goldstein.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, you will get an alert. Of course, all the major telcos are involved in this, plus also some partners in the third sector. For example, Alzheimer's Society.
Mencap.
Not quite sure. Mencap and so on, but also then various sport and leisure organizations, transport, retail, and so on. And they've got the full set of propaganda to go out. So they've got the social content for the social media platforms. But terrorism is very much a key part of this. So you'll be glad to know, you will be glad to know that the counterterrorism policing situation has been updated. We have a new e-learning mechanism for this under the Action Counters Terrorism brand.
So the terrorists have been on vacation. What's the story? We haven't seen them around much. There's the guy on the London Bridge with the knives.
That's right, but
the gaffer tape.
But you'll be glad to know that 250,000 people have now downloaded the ACT app. And now that we're coming out of lockdown, it's much more important that more people do this. So the government is launching a campaign to get you and me and everybody else to download the ACT app, because it's very important. Are you playing your part to make sure you're protecting your staff and customers from more than just COVID? It's not too late to ensure your organization is prepared to combat the threat of terrorism. These simple actions could save lives. You could be security-minded when planning and providing briefings to staff. You could ensure that your spaces meet COVID public health regulations, because that helps with terrorism as well.
Sure.
You could ensure your staff and volunteers are educated by signing them up to the ACT e-learning training. It's free and it takes just 45 minutes. Here's the company that you can go to. This is all about awareness e-learning. And so it goes on.
Are you being safe enough? This is the question. Is everyone being safe enough? We need to be safer and safer still.
Yes, that's true. There is a hashtag, which is Communities Defeat Terrorism. So that's good. There's a hashtag that goes with it. But here's the Counterterrorism Policing Easing Lockdown Vigilance Campaign. It's been updated. And with all the messaging and materials that a business may need to keep everyone safe, it now includes situationally specific messaging and bespoke assets designed for use surrounding the Euro champion. Well, I don't quite understand.
Let me get this straight, Mike. We're easing lockdown. Now you got to watch out for terrorism.
That's correct. But you'll notice, please don't publish the link to this toolkit. I'm not clear why they would be,
But yet they put it online.
Yes,
indeed. Strange.
So they put it online, want the link published.
It could have been a mistake. They could have put the wrong file up on their website.
Right.
Could be human error.
Could be. But so don't worry, the link will be under the video when we've published the video on demand version of UK Column News later on. So you will be able to find that site. Okay, let's move on. Mark Carney, if you remember, last year or so, had this to say: at the core of the system, now these questions are being asked. If you're on the right side or the wrong side, and if you're on the wrong side, what are you going to do about it? So what's he talking about? Well, of course, it's if you're a business and if you're perhaps not quite as environmentally aware or climate change aware as you should be.
Emitting too much carbon.
For example.
Or not paying your indulgence tax.
That's right. So remember that wasn't last year. That was 2019. These comments were made just before the pandemic hit, really. He went on to say this: companies that don't adapt, including companies in the financial system, will go bankrupt without question.
I'm going to punish them.
That's exactly what he says. There will be industries, sectors and firms that do very well during this process because they'll be part of the solution, but there'll also be ones that lag behind and they will be punished.
Okay.
So that was what he had to say.
He's Klaus Schwab's hatchet man.
He is Klaus Schwab's hatchet man. He's, of course, Boris Johnson's advisor for the COP26. He's also the United Nations advisor on climate change. He doesn't really know anything about it. He's really taking all this information from his wife, who's a longtime climate change campaigner. It's amazing how many of these people get involved in projects that are actually being driven by their wives. But anyway, why am I talking about this? Because the government has just launched this. They would like anybody with a small business to become a UK business climate leader. 2021 is the year of climate action, and we should all be starting our net zero journey today. And remember, if you don't start your net zero journey, you will be punished. So Boris Johnson and Kwasi Kwarteng, second time he's been mentioned on this programme, today are calling on every small business in the UK to take part, take small practical steps to cut their emissions as part of the UK's journey to net zero by 2050 in the run-up to the COP26 in Glasgow this November. And so they are launching the Together for Our Planet Business Climate Leaders campaign. It's a new drive to encourage small and micro businesses to commit to cutting their emissions in half by 2030 and to net zero by 2050. Or sooner through the new UK Business Climate Hub. Small businesses can use the hub and find practical tools, resources, and advice. It is really amazing stuff.
So small businesses don't really emit much carbon at all, Mike. So they're being made to take the full brunt of this. Meanwhile, big corporations can do what? They can pay for carbon offsets.
Well, that's true. But you've got to remember that these big companies are setting the standard because they are already signed up to the United Nations Race to Zero campaign.
It's net zero.
Well, they're just calling it Race to Zero, it seems.
It's net zero, which means that you can offset your carbon emissions if you buy your carbon offset credits and invest in the new green economy. So again, Amazon, no problem. Any of the big corporations, no problem. Small to medium-sized businesses, Mark Carney says, we're going to punish you.
And we've got to remember that so many of the big players, for example, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, buying up huge swathes of farmland. Why are they suddenly getting involved in farming? No, of course not. It's about carbon offsets, and it's actually about shutting down farming. But the Together for the Planet Business Climate Leaders campaign is going to encourage as many small businesses with 250 employees or fewer to take these first steps and making the SME climate commitment. And so the language just keeps going on and on. But apparently business isn't going to get an opportunity to go on and on because, of course, if you're doing business, you can't be you can't be carbon zero.
Yeah, you can't be net zero. You can't afford to be net zero. So they're going to regulate you out of existence. So the question is, Mike, if the climate's changing, how is it changing? Is it getting warmer or is it getting cooler? And so all of this stuff that you've just shown me, Mike, is really the idea behind it is that somehow man-made CO2 is heating up the planet. Therefore, we must put all of these regulations and you have to buy all these fancy financial products that are supposedly green and you need to shut down this, shut down that. Because what? Man-made CO2 is warming the planet. Mm. Well, take a look at this, and we're just pointing this out here. 2021, this has been one of the longest, coldest winters in decades here. This is a news report here. This was from March, February, registered as the coldest winter in over 30 years, Mike. And we go on as well, similar report here. UK weather, April set to be the frostiest in 60 years. It was, in fact. And we don't have the May results yet, Mike, but this has been one of the coldest non-sunny Mays in living memory, right?
Yeah, well, everybody's still using their heating, Patrick.
Well, so this is what the climatist cultists in the media are spinning this. They're saying 2021, European cold spring does not mean climate change is fake. Notice how they still use the word climate change. So, of course, the climate changes, but they don't want to say man-made global warming because clearly we're in a massive cold spell, Mike. So, and this is how the mainstream media is reacting here to this cold snap. They're spinning it, saying that the Earth is now inches closer to dangerous climate tipping point in the next 5 years, say science. And now this went across every mainstream media outlet yesterday. So if you think that these are all independent outlets, look at this. There's Greta. She is definitely endorsing this article. And look at this, AP forecast. I love this headline, Mike. 40% chance that the Earth might be hotter than the Paris Accords goal soon, says Associated Press.
Soon when?
We're not sure exactly when, but soon.
And it's a 40% chance?
There's a 40% chance. And again, Greta is also backing this particular story. But we're going to point people to some of the scientific papers that are saying something very different here. This was published in August 2020. A modern grand solar minimum will lead to terrestrial cooling here. And this is what this author says. The sun, that's a very conspiratorial concept. The sun has entered into a modern grand solar minimum that will lead to significant reduction of solar magnetic field and activity, like during the Maunder minimum, leading to noticeable reduction in terrestrial temperature. And this would be, Mike, from 2020 to 2053. So we're looking at a kind of a 30, 35-year window with regards to this cooling spell here. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. I'm only showing you one scientific paper.
And just as an aside, it's fascinating that the UK has just launched a satellite to, for the first time ever, measure the amount of solar radiation hitting the surface of the Earth. This is something that hasn't been, from space at least, hasn't been measured on a day-to-day basis in the past. Suddenly, they're interested in knowing what solar activity is doing.
So if this is correct here, Mike, and it looks like it is, what does that mean for agriculture in the Northern Hemisphere? Good news or bad news?
Well, it means that the grow zones move south.
Well, yeah, it means that there's going to be big problems in the Northern Hemisphere. So why the rush for a great reset in 2020? Why are they rushing this down? Because why? Is it because of this? And what's Greta's reaction to this, Mike? He's not happy about this particular scientific paper or anything like it. She's saying, how dare you? How dare you even utter the words grand solar minimum or Maunder minimum? But put that in Google, Maunder minimum, or DuckDuckGo, or whatever search engine you want, and just see what comes out. Maunder minimum, grand solar minimum. See what comes up on your search engine and do some research. Don't take our word for it.
Yes. Now, the issue in Belarus continues to rumble on. And here's Dominic Raab once again making a statement. The UK welcomes the ICAO investigation into the Lukashenko regime's forced landing of Ryanair flight FR4978. So this is the International Civil Aviation Authority, organization, and it's supported by an overwhelming majority of international delegations to launch an international fact-finding investigation into the events related to the forced landing of Ryanair flight FR4978 in Belarus on Sunday, the 23rd of May. He went on to say, we join our international partners in wanting to know the full circumstances that led up to this grave violation of international law and the attack on principles that underpin civil aviation. So that's the British government's position. Let's look at the G7's position. So here they are. Here's the G7. What did they have to say? They said this action jeopardized the safety of the passengers and the crew of the flight. It was also a serious attack on the rules governing civil aviation. All our countries and our citizens depend on every state acting responsibly and fulfilling their duties under the Chicago Convention so that civil aircraft can operate safely and securely. We call on the ICAO to urgently address this challenge to its rules and standards. That seems to be what they've done now, or at least they've started an investigation. The problem here is, Patrick, as we mentioned on Extra Time on Wednesday, that the West doesn't have clean hands on this. If we look back a few years, 7 years ago, Bolivian president's jet rerouted amid suspicions Edward Snowden was on board. And what happened here was that the Bolivian president had been at a summit in Moscow, was heading back to his own country. And at the behest of the US government, the French authorities and the Portuguese authorities closed their airspace.
In Spain, I think, yeah.
Well, I didn't see Spain mentioned, but certainly those two And the plane was therefore forced to land in Austria. Why was it forced to land in Austria? Because they believed that Edward Snowden was on board and they wanted to pluck him off that that flight. So even the Russians, as we mentioned on Extra Time, have made a statement about this, criticizing the West, saying that the Western government should be shocked by everything, including the moves to force down the Bolivian president's plane in Austria at the United States' request, and the Belarusian aircraft carrying an anti-Maidan activist. Otherwise, such behavior should not come as a shock to them. So,
Ukrainian security services ordered down a flight not so long ago because they under a national security concern because there was an activist there that was going against the government's party line, and that's the Ukraine, the cauldron of freedom, democracy, ethics, and every good thing in the international community. So, Mike, here's the question. Is it illegal under international law? You can make an argument that it is. However, is it unprecedented? Not at all. So there's a big air of hypocrisy there. And I might add, the journalist in question is 26 years old, opposition journalist Roman Protasevich. And his media organization, Nexta, based in Poland, were operating out of Poland. And so he's flitting between Lithuania, Estonia, Poland, and doing opposition activity in media. And they actually did a documentary that went viral. It's called Lukashenko's Goldmine. It got millions of views. Turns out it was it had fake news about the EU funding Lukashenko's properties. And they did, I don't know if they retracted this, but they aired this film on Next. This is in the media outlet that he's involved with. So you can see there's a lot going on here. Yeah. This isn't just about a freedom-loving opposition journalist. There's a lot of politics and geopolitics going on behind the scenes. You've got Open Society. You've got the National Endowment for Democracy. You've got the German Marshall Fund. You've got Radio Free Europe, the Oslo Freedom Forum. All of these organizations are regime change incubators, okay? And they're fedding and coddling all of these, quote, opposition journalists they've suddenly become interested in Belarus, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, who recently, said that the election was stolen from her, from Lukashenko. And so there's more, any of these people, they're becoming geopolitical pawns.
Yes.
By these Western civil society organizations and the U.S. State Department, okay? And the EU is involved in this as well. So this isn't just, so the way that they're sculpting the storylines in the press, is the Belarusian government playing hardball by forcing down a commercial jet with their air force? Yes, they're playing hardball, but it's not any different. In fact, it's not as bad as the hardball that's being played against Julian Assange
right
now. He's being held as a Category A prisoner, unconvicted, not charged with anything, and he's rotting away in Belmarsh prison, and the government doesn't seem to want to release him anytime soon. Mm. So how many years is he going to be in there for? So that's what's going on. Ed Snowden, same thing. They're playing hardball. But when Belarus plays hardball, because they have what they deem to be a national security threat. And if you think about the Western countries involved in all of mixing in with, sponsoring practically these opposition figures, that could be deemed as a national security issue.
Well,
legitimately.
It's clearly a national security issue.
Is it legal? Maybe not by international law, but do they have some sovereign interest in that? Quite possibly. You have to look at the bigger context.
Yes. Yes. You absolutely.
Which is what we're saying.
Yes. Okay, well, we've got to leave it there for today. Thank you very much for joining us today. Patrick, thank you for joining us. We will be back at the same time, 1 p.m. on Monday. I hope you have a great weekend, and I hope everybody gets the weather at the event in London. We'll see you on Monday. See you then. Bye-bye.